It's Thursday, April 4th. I'm Priyanka Arabindi.
And I'm Juanita Tolliver, and this is What a Day, the pod that says forced retirement might be in order for some TV shows.
This week, ABC renewed Grey's Anatomy for its 21st season. And we're just asking when these doctors get to hang up their scrubs, cash out their 401ks, and retire.
Yeah, when Grey's is old enough to buy itself its own drinks, I feel like we gotta let her go.
Yep.
Had a good time.
We had a great run.
On today's show, NCAA star Angel Reese says she's going pro. Plus, we hear from the campaign manager behind Wisconsin's successful voting effort to get Biden's attention on Gaza.
If we're going to avoid fascism later this year, we need this administration to respond now.
But first, the fallout from Israeli airstrikes that killed 7 aid workers in Gaza earlier this week continues. On Tuesday evening, President Biden issued a statement describing his response to this attack with a word that he's rarely used since the start of this war, outrage. Biden wrote that he was, quote, outraged and heartbroken by the deaths, which he called a tragedy, and he emphasized that this wasn't a standalone event. Since the start of the war in October, just shy of 6 months ago, 203 aid workers have been killed in Gaza, according to the Aid Worker Security Database. And if that figure is news to you, it might be because all of those people were Palestinian, whereas this group of World Central Kitchen workers was made up primarily of international aid workers and has the backing of a very prominent humanitarian figure. Biden went on in his statement to blame Israel for its failure to protect aid workers and civilians, saying, quote, incidents like yesterday's simply should not happen. But despite the outrage, as of yesterday, the White House still hasn't announced any changes to their policies on Israel or their continued support. When asked by CNN if these deaths and Biden's reaction changed anything, National Security spokesman John Kirby said that the administration had been clear and vocal about their objections, but would not go so far as to withdraw their support.
I feel like the most frustrating thing is to hear that behind the scenes, Biden was enraged and how outraged he is, but they're going to keep doing what they're doing. So the condemnation since the strikes on Monday night have continued all around the world. I know World Central Kitchen's founder, Jose Andres, has also been very vocal. Tell us more about what he's had to say.
Yes. And just for a little background here, Andres is a renowned chef and humanitarian. He founded World Central Kitchen to feed people in need who are on the front lines of wars and crises. And they've become known as one of the most agile and effective groups that does this. He is really, truly a hero. But he spoke out yesterday to reject the explanation that these strikes were not a deliberate attack against humanitarian workers, which is an assertion that Israel and the U.S. continue to stand by. Take a listen to him speaking with Reuters yesterday.
What I know is that we were targeted deliberately, nonstop, until everybody was dead in this convoy. This happened over more than 1.5, 1.8 kilometers. So this was not just bad luck situation where, oops, we dropped the bomb in the wrong place. No, this was over 1.5, 1.8 kilometers with a very defined humanitarian convoy that had signs in the top, in the roof.
He reiterated that the IDF had been made aware of the convoy's location ahead of time and called for investigations into what happened, not only by Israel, which has already launched one, but by the U.S. and the home countries of every aid worker who was killed. He also said, quote, the U.S. must do more to tell Prime Minister Netanyahu this war needs to end now.
On the topic of aid, we touched on this yesterday, but these deaths have impacted aid delivery into Gaza. What more do we know at this time?
Yes, at least two other aid groups have suspended their operations in Gaza since the deaths of these workers. Groups that are still delivering food say that they are being much more cautious. Countries like the U.S., France, Jordan, and Egypt are still airdropping supplies into Gaza. But according to the UN, the only way to sufficiently ramp up aid to the levels that they need it to be is by truck. As we said yesterday, half of Gaza's 2 million plus people are on the brink of famine. It's a humanitarian disaster, to say the very least. Just last week, the U.S. State Department said that famine is probably already present in some parts of northern Gaza. And the interruption in these deliveries of food, even if it's only for a few days, will have dire consequences for people who have already been struggling for months on end now. Andreas did say that World Central Kitchen is assessing the safety risks in Gaza and contemplating restarting operations in the midst of their own losses. But in addition to this strike and the logistics of delivering aid, he did use this opportunity to speak more broadly about this war. He penned a very moving op-ed in the New York Times yesterday, not only about the deaths of his colleagues, but pleading with the Israeli government to stop using food as a weapon of war. We'll link to that in our show notes if you want to read more. I highly recommend. And I will also leave you with this from his interview with Reuters.
Humanitarians and civilians should never be paying the consequences of war. This is a basic principle of humanity. At the time, this looks like it's not a war against terrorism anymore. Seems this is a war against humanity itself.
I think that's the explicit exclamation point that people have been making since Israel started its bombardment in Gaza. I appreciate Jose Andres for explicitly making that clear yet again. I'm also dumbfounded by the fact that World Central Kitchen is still prepared to continue delivering aid. I think that's heroic at this stage, knowing the dire strait that Gazans are in.
Truly.
Let's turn to Wisconsin now, where Democratic voters there made a big statement on Gaza with their ballots in Tuesday's primary. More than 48,000 people voted for uninstructed instead of for Joe Biden. That more than doubled the original goal of 20,000 set by the Listen to Wisconsin campaign. It also more than doubled the margin that President Biden won the state with during the 2020 election. And these numbers demonstrate a stark reality for the Biden campaign. The same coalition of voters who elected him in 2020 hold the power to oppose him in 2024.
Absolutely. And these numbers are really serious business. Michigan, Minnesota, Washington, and Hawaii have all earned party delegates for uncommitted so far for the Democratic National Convention in August. And so all of those uninstructed votes from Wisconsin have to get the administration's attention. No, but has it?
That's the hope of the Listen to Wisconsin campaign and the hope of the Uncommitted United movement writ large. In response to the primary election results on Tuesday, Ben Wickler, chair of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, told NPR that the president is listening and his party is working to gain their support. However, Priyanka, as you mentioned, we haven't seen Biden change his posture with Israel as the United States continues to send military aid and munitions to Netanyahu. So we turn to the Listen to Wisconsin campaign to hear what Tuesday night's results meant and what the movement looks like going forward. I spoke with Rima Ahmad, campaign manager for Listen to Wisconsin. Take a listen to our conversation. From a human perspective, considering the latest reports of violence in Gaza, what were you thinking and feeling as you watched those returns?
Oh gosh, I'm really going to get this emotional. It was surreal. I'm fasting right now. It is the month of Ramadan. And there was a moment leaving our volunteer site and getting prepared for the polls to close to watch the results, where it struck me that here I'm at the end of my fast and I have the luxury of being able to break it and thinking about how our tax dollars are imposing a man-made famine on the people in Gaza. I come from organizing. I do a lot of civic engagement work. I've been part of many different political campaigns before, but this is hands down the most impactful thing, the most important campaign I've ever been a part of, because it's about life. We are trying to stop a genocide, and we are using every tool in the toolbox, every opportunity through our democracy to register dissent and push this administration towards drastic policy change.
And you mentioned that 71% of Democratic voters in Wisconsin support a ceasefire. And based on these turnout numbers, it's clear that the uncommitted movement is not confined to the Arab community. It's not confined to the Muslim community. So how would you describe the coalition that turned out in support of the Listen to Wisconsin campaign?
It is a multi-faith, multi-racial, intergenerational, and statewide group. We've been leaning into one another, learning about different communities, seeing how intersectional Palestinian liberation is for many different people of varied backgrounds and experiences. And so that is the coalition that made up the folks that came out and voted. And it also is, importantly, the coalition of people who are going to continue to organize.
While President Biden has recognized people's right to speak out and cast protest ballots, his position on Israel's bombardment of Gaza hasn't shifted, even with the large turnout for the uncommitted movement across the nation. So what does that mean for the movement's goals going forward?
I'm going to offer some grace to this administration, because I could see how seeing this type of onslaught from a place like Wisconsin, where, again, the margins are so close, to see this very clear statement from voters that have been part of his base saying, we need this. We need these demands met now. We need a permanent an unconditional ceasefire. We need an end to military funding of Israel. And we need you to take seriously that there is a threat to democracy 7 months from now in the general election. And so what happens now is, frankly, the ball is in this administration's court. We need them to take seriously the demands that week after week through this primary election season have been made of this administration. Poll after poll showing that a majority of Americans have been calling for the ceasefire. A majority of Wisconsinites do not want a war or are against a war with Israel. My hope is that they do so much sooner than later, because democracy is on the line. And if we're going to avoid fascism later this year, we need this administration to respond now.
Now, of course, my follow-up has to be, what if they don't respond come the fall? How are you all prepared to act in that reality or potential reality?
It's hard to answer that question, if I can be perfectly honest and vulnerable, because there is an ongoing genocide right now. Every single day, innocent people are killed, and they are being killed with missiles funded by our tax dollars. It is unconscionable for me or anyone else in the anti-war movement to have to answer for what is going to happen in 7 months when we have the ability to take action right now. And we need our president, this administration, to heed the words of a growing majority of Americans all across this country saying, enough, we do not want to be complicit anymore. You need to listen to us. And that starts with our election in Wisconsin, uninstructed. Listen to Wisconsin.
That was my conversation with Rima Ahmad, campaign manager for Listen to Wisconsin.
Before we wrap up, there is another important result out of Wisconsin's primary elections, and it has to do with two constitutional amendments that passed. What do we need to know about those?
These two constitutional amendments were championed by Republicans, and they basically hurt efforts to make future election days go smoothly. One of them blocks the use of private funds and grants to help run elections. The other limits who can run those elections to just official government workers. So that means people who volunteer as poll workers or in other roles might not be allowed. What's more unfortunate is that this will likely impact voters' access to the polls in November, and that's just bad news for democracy. If this makes you mad, it should. But as always, you can be part of the solution by heading to votesaveamerica.com. That's the latest for now. We'll be back after some ads.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let's wrap up with some headlines.
Headlines.
There are at least 9 people dead in Taiwan and hundreds more injured after a 7.4 magnitude earthquake struck off the country's eastern coast. It happened Wednesday morning local time, and it predominantly affected a rural coastal region. However, several large buildings throughout Taiwan collapsed because of the shaking. Massive rescue efforts are currently underway. As of our recording time at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday night, there are more than 100 people trapped in mines and in collapsed tunnels along roads. The quake was the biggest one to strike Taiwan in 25 years. We've got links to some local aid organizations in our show notes so you can help the victims.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky signed legislation on Tuesday that lowers the age for men to be drafted into the war from 27 to 25. It also eliminates some medical exemptions to military service, and younger men drafted under this new law won't be mobilized until they are 27. Ukraine's parliament originally approved the bill last summer, but Zelensky put off signing it, knowing it was a deeply unpopular policy. Ukrainian military officials, however, pressured him to find more troops amid Russia's ongoing invasion. Many soldiers who have been on the front line since the war started 2 years ago have had little to no time off. And Ukraine is still waiting on the U.S. to approve another military aid package to sustain the troops they currently have.
More than 53,000 people have fled Haiti's capital city of Port-au-Prince in less than 3 weeks because of a surge in gang violence in the area. That is according to a new report that the UN released on Tuesday. More than half of those fleeing are headed to the southern region of the country, where more than 100,000 Haitians have already fled. A spokesman for the UN told the Associated Press that the region does not have the resources to support more refugees from Port-au-Prince. We've talked on the show before about how the violence began in late February when gangs attacked multiple government institutions and refused to let Prime Minister Ariel Henry re-enter the country. More than 1,500 people have been killed, and the violence in the capital has gotten so bad that the World Food Program says that nearly 1 million Haitians are at risk of famine, and thousands have been left homeless.
The special counsel in former President Donald Trump's classified documents case appears to have reached a breaking point. In a court filing Tuesday night, special counsel Jack Smith said that the judge overseeing the case, Judge Eileen Cannon, yeah, I said her name funny for a reason, is pursuing a legal premise that is, quote, wrong and also fundamentally flawed. It started last month when Judge Cannon told both sides to come up with two sets of instructions for the jury. But the big problem, according to Smith and many other legal experts, is that she asked them to consider a reading of the Presidential Records Act that could protect Trump. Smith argues that some of the documents in question are classified documents, and so the act shouldn't even apply in this case and would only benefit Trump. In Tuesday's filing, Smith urged Judge Cannon to make a quick decision on the relevance of that premise so that he could appeal to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Essentially, he's saying, hurry up and rule so I can get you overturned and undermined in a higher court. Okay, thanks.
Absolutely.
The former president is accused of refusing to return thousands of official documents to the National Archives. Meanwhile, the New York judge overseeing Trump's criminal hush money trial denied a last-ditch effort from Trump's legal team on Wednesday to delay that case further. It's scheduled to start April 15th.
Truly amazing that this man juggles all of this and a presidential campaign. He's a horrible human being, but he is inspiring me a little bit to be a little more on top of my schedule. No, just to be like a little more like, he's just got a lot of shit going on. And I'm like, listen, if he can get all of this done, I'm a better human being than he is. I can get more done in my day to day. That is my takeaway, other than he is an awful person. And you can cut it if you don't feel like it's the vibe, but like, it is just my takeaway. Staying in Trump world for a little longer, lucky us, the former president's media company, Trump Media and Technology Group, is mired in a wave of legal drama. On Wednesday, two Floridian brothers pleaded guilty to an insider trading scheme tied to the deal that helped Trump Media go public. Michael and Gerald Schwartzman were arrested back in June. They were charged with illegally trading on the knowledge that a wealthy shell company secretly planned to merge with Trump Media back in 2021. The indictment said that they made more than $22 million trading on that insider knowledge. The two men face up to 20 years in prison. Trump himself was not implicated in the scheme. That's the surprising part. Meanwhile, Trump Media is also suing two of its co-founders over allegations that the men badly mismanaged the business. The lawsuit was actually filed in Florida state court last month, one day before Trump Media made its stock market debut. It alleges that the two co-founders, Andy Litinsky and Wes Moss, bungled the business at every turn and should be stripped of their shares. Both men were contestants on Trump's reality TV show, The Apprentice, in case you're wondering how one hires for this mess of a role. They sued Trump back in February in Delaware, alleging that the former president was trying to dilute their stake in the new company, now valued at nearly $7 billion. Obviously, that's what he's trying to do. It's Donald Trump. Like, did you not expect this?
We need to just call him Joanne the scammer.
Trump is the ultimate scammer.
Louisiana State University's Angel Reese says she's heading to the WNBA. The star forward made her announcement to declare for the draft Wednesday in a fashion shoot for Vogue. Vogue! Like,
love
Anna
it.
Wintour approved this spread, Miss Honey. I love every bit of this. Reese said she wanted to announce her decision in the iconic fashion magazine because, quote, I didn't want anything to be basic. Honey, you could never.
Could never. It was amazing.
Reese made the decision to turn pro 2 days after LSU lost to Iowa State in the Elite Eight of the women's NCAA tournament. She helped lead LSU to the school's first basketball championship last year. Reese had the option of staying at LSU for another year after the NCAA expanded player eligibility because of COVID. But she told Vogue, quote, I want to be a rookie again and build myself back up. And while she's building herself back up, I really, really, really hope that she's not subjected to the level of abuse that she experienced throughout her time at LSU.
Definitely.
Meanwhile, Monday's game between LSU and Iowa shattered viewing records for women's college basketball. An average of 12.3 million viewers turned into the rematch of last year's women's championship game with a peak of 16 million viewers. It was the most watched college basketball game, men's or women's, to ever air on ESPN platforms, according to Nielsen data, and you love to see it. Breaking records.
That is so cool. This is really exciting. I love this announcement. We're just going to bring the excitement here to the WNBA, which has already been an exciting place. Like, I love to see it. Women's sports at the professional level just keeps getting better.
And since ESPN is the platform where this happens, go ahead and pay up those rights to air and broadcast these games. I want a better deal for the WNBA because absolutely this energy is going to translate over.
Yes, please.
And those are the headlines.
One more thing before we go. How can we be happy? That is what we all want to know. And no, this isn't about to turn into an ad for my new cult, but... if you want one, just let me know. Drop it in the Discord, I guess. On the latest episode of Offline, Dr. Lori Santos, Yale University's happiness professor, joins host Jon Favreau to lay out a scientific guide to finding happiness. I just hope she doesn't want to take away my 4 hours of mindless scrolling per night. I feel personally attacked by whoever wrote this copy.
Rude.
Give it a listen now, only on the Offline feed.
That's all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review. We're here for the LSU to WNBA pipeline, and tell your friends to listen.
And if you are into reading and not just that gorgeous Vogue photo spread of Angel Reese like me, What A Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Priyanka Arabindi.
I'm Juanita Tolliver.
And just retire already, Dr. Gray.
She's like, I'll pop in when I'm up for it.
If you're watching Grey's Anatomy and Meredith Grey isn't even showing up every episode, what are you doing with your life? Please, there's other TV. Branch out. It's been too long.
I haven't watched since like the 2010s, honestly.
What A Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Bill Lance. Our associate producers are Raven Yamamoto and Natalie Bettendorf. We had production help today from Michelle Aloy, Greg Walters, and Julia Clare. Our showrunner is Leo Duran, and our executive producer is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka.